Rebecca Stout Bradbury, one of Rex Stout's daughters, as well as her niece, Liz Maroc, and Rebecca's daughter, Lisa, are here to talk about Rex Stout. They're going to answer questions from the audience. They're not going to make a speech. I'm going to do the lead-off question, and then I'll take some of the questions from the audience. Focus on the personal relationships amongst the Stout family. As we've learned from family members who have joined us in the past, they were not involved with the minutiae of the books the way we are. So focus on the family and the life with Rex Stout, not with Weber, the glass of milk Inspector Kramer had ready for Archie in the hotel room was skim or whole, okay? I am going to ask the Stout family members to come up, and I'm going to make the first question, but first let's have the ladies come up. Thank you for coming.
No, I don't remember. My mother was. Yes, she. My mother spoke German, Polish,
like six different languages.
Some Italian, French, but my father. I don't know how skilled he was. He was very good at helping me with my French lessons because I'm sure that's the only way I passed it.
Been skeptical about the reports I've heard that Rex Stout wrote his stories by sitting down at a typewriter and typing and never going back and never correcting. Is that the truth? And if so, do you know anything? Can you tell us anything about what he did before sitting down?
Yes, that is the truth. And he would, before he started writing, he would tell us that this book was going to take him 42 days because he had to take 3 days out for a meeting or whatever. And I don't know if he sat up in his office and typed one piece of one word at a time or whatever he did, but he always ended it on that exact day that he said he would. The way that our family knew that my dad was going to start writing, he became more quiet than usual, and he, not physically, but emotionally, removed himself from any extemporaneous discussion at the dinner table or anything. So you could always tell that his mind was somewhere else. And the preparation he did for the books was on a 4x8, maybe 4x6 piece of yellow paper, pads, where he wrote the names of the characters in the book, the age, and perhaps a word or two of description. And that was all.
Well, it was the first time or the second time that we were lucky enough to visit My Meadow. Some of the family members related some of the stories about Mr. Stout's building of the house, and that he was very stubborn, and some of the things he did were not correct, but that he wasn't the one to admit that. If you could relate that story, I think it would be fun for us to hear again.
Liz?
Yep. Yes, we still live in the house. The only one thing I can think of that, of course, always makes my husband laugh, and we've changed, but it's in the living room windows was, you know, there's a large expanse of windows in the living room, which, until we changed them, would actually get ice on the inside because of the way he had slanted them. The water actually ran on them. But I don't, and all the years you lived there, I mean, it was probably the same way,
and he
never changed it. I mean, once they were in, that was it. But in all honesty, other than that, I mean, even to this day, I'm amazed that the house is now, what, from 1930, how old
30.
It is?
Yeah.
And how much of it is still the original and that he did it right. You know, they're really, anytime someone comes to look at it or we have a builder or someone there, I mean, he really did it right the first time, and it's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we couldn't tell him that. His ego was big enough as it was, but... But he did a very good job.
Did they build a lot of the house himself?
Yes, with approximately 20 to 25 farm boys from the area. They, you know, poured the cement and did it all themselves.
I was wondering if he was like a wine person or a night person. Was he somebody who rolled up at like the crack of dawn and maybe walked around with your ladies?
I think he rose at the crack of dawn, but he did not like morning.
He did not like morning.
What was it? He used to come in the kitchen, and there was some saying he would always say. He'd stand there and just say it. He hated mornings.
Yeah,
totally. But he would, you know. But he was very, I think, always would do the same thing. So he always got up early. I mean, he was would not sleep late at all.
No, he would not sleep late. And his routine was very systematic. I mean, when I was at college, I would know when the best time to call my father was, because I would know what his routine would be in the morning. And he did not start writing until about 11 o'clock in the morning. And then he would stop at 6 o'clock. And you could hear him come down the stairs precisely at 6 o'clock. And we always ate dinner as a family at 6:30.
In the morning, he would have, I don't know about when you guys were growing up, but when we lived there, we were growing up, my job in the morning was to crack two eggs into a glass, a tall glass, and you'd put it there, and he'd come in the kitchen, and he'd say whatever, which I can't remember now, he'd said, and then he would take the glass, and because he thought that was healthy for him, he'd swallow the two eggs raw, and then he'd go on every single morning.
Going back to the writing, were you allowed to bother him while he was writing? Did you dare walk in?
Oh, no. No.
Rebecca, did your mother dare bother him? Did anybody walk in when he was writing?
No, absolutely not. And at High Meadow, for those of you who have not been there, his office window was right facing a courtyard where we loved to play. But we were not allowed to play there during the hours that he was writing.
Would he take phone calls when he was writing?
No.
He was not a big fan of the phone. Actually, in his office, he had made a switch, which he could switch the phone on and off. So when he was writing, he would switch it off. The phone was not one of his... I mean, he used it when he had to, but it was an interruption. Yes.
I bet he wouldn't have lived on the internet then.
Oh, he would not have had a computer.
No, I can't imagine
that. He had the hand typewriter.
You have stuff.
Yes, that I have.
I had two questions about John McAleer. I'm proud to say your father's archives reside at my alma mater.
Oh, D.C.
So I was wondering how long it took to write that biography. John spend a lot of time at your home?
I think it took about 7 years. Yes, from start to finish. Yes, and he did spend a lot of time talking with him. Yes.
Very nice, nice guy.
Oh, yeah,
I think John and my dad became good friends.
Can you tell us a little bit about your Aunt Ruth? We watched her 5 years ago. Oh, yeah. We watched the video of her about the organic gardening, and she seemed like the most amazing woman. I'd like to know a little more about her.
And did she really garden in the nude?
Yes, she did. She did. Yes. Her husband said he could always tell if she was out gardening because the cars drove slower by the house.
She had a royal blue couch in her living room that she resided on.
Drank her daiquiris.
She had kept a big gallon glass jug of pre-made daiquiris and Manhattans in her refrigerator. And she just enjoyed life. Yeah, she was really an interesting person. And I remember the Thanksgiving that her husband died. It was Thanksgiving morning, and the phone rang, and my dad saying that her husband had died. Fred died that morning. And my father made some comment and came back to the table and said, "Fred has died. I will go and see Ruth later on today. Let's continue with our day." And that's just how it was handled.
I think he was much more of a routine person than she was. He would always think that she was kind of crazy. You know, why was she doing these things?
Yeah.
And, you know, but they had a very good relationship.
I think they did.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. My dad and Harold, who was one of the 20 farm boys that helped my father build High Meadow, would go over to my Aunt Ruth's and pull up maybe you can describe it better, the garden. He had built a chicken wire container for her garden.
So the animals
deer,
couldn't get in.
So the animals and the rat, the deer and the rabbits couldn't get in. And my father and Harold would have to go with my dad's Jeep and pull it up when the winds would become too strong and push it down.
And I think she always made them a navy bean soup because they were always going over to Ruth's and they were going to have her navy bean soup that she would make. It was always the same thing. She was funny too. I think when she was in her 80s, she had written a letter to someone about, not sure if it was President Nixon or who was at the time, that actually the FBI came to her house to question her about it, which she enjoyed immensely and thought it was amusing that some woman her age they would be concerned enough about to come and question her about this.
Were there any other siblings that were around that were living in the area?
My Aunt Betty, my dad's sister, lived in New York and was a nurse at... I want to say Columbia Presbyterian Hospital for many years. My Aunt Mary lived in Reading for many years in a little guest house that was on my Aunt Ruth's property.
Mm-hmm. So the family was around?
Yeah, yeah. And the only other relative of the only other brother of my dad's that I remember is Walt, that I met occasionally. He lived in New York. But the cousins all knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My brother is right.
What's his name?
Right. Reed Murach. I think, you know, he's written some short stories and a pretty good writer. I mean, not good enough, as good as my grandfather to be published, but in the family, I think he's probably, don't you guys? Yeah.
When he would come down at 6 for writing, would you know if it was a good or bad day for him? Would he discuss it with you?
No, he wouldn't discuss it. He might make a comment at dinner. Nero had a very interesting day, or do you know what Nero and Archie just talked about? So to us, it was as if Nero and Archie were upstairs. they were real people. You know, yeah, that's the kind of comment
he
would
make.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, as you live in the house with your grandfather?
For a couple years when I was young.
You never did, right? Up in California, right?
I, no, well, did I grow up?
Yeah,
did I stay in house?
Yeah, you didn't live in High, grow up
no,
in High Meadow.
No,
yeah.
we would spend a good amount of time there during the summers.
Is there a different perception of your grandfather? One saw him more, or?
I don't think so.
I don't know that we've ever talked about it.
Yeah. I would tend to say he was probably pretty much the same with everybody.
What I remember is he's still in his later years, had the same routine, and my sister and I would come down for breakfast, and he would do the same thing every morning, and there were things that you did do, some things you didn't do, and...
He'd sit there and play school with us for hours.
Oh, yeah.
He would be the student, and I would be the teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and if you ever he was in his office, you had a question, you could always go up and ask him, and he would, you know, turn and pay attention and answer you and, you know, become very involved in whatever you were talking about. So I think he enjoyed the kids.
He would allow my sister and I to make a post office out of his actual office, and we would set up camp there when he wasn't in there, and we would play at post office and whatever other game.
Which, when you think of how neat and organized he was with everything, it would have been a decision he really made, like, okay, I'm going to let them do this, even though it probably made him a little, you know,
absolutely
crazy. Because everything, I mean, his office, everything was in its place and perfect, so.
What would the routine be when he wasn't spending those 42 days writing? Did he have a set routine, or what would he do during the day, excluding the time with the writer's war board,
uh-huh,
excluding that time when he obviously was tending to good propaganda business, what would the day be like?
He would always answer his mail. He would always read the newspaper and do the crossword puzzle. He would, depending on the season, garden. He would be building a piece of furniture. He would be working for the Authors League of America, where he was very involved for many years, or the Writers' War Board, or with Norman Cousins. Yes.
I think it's pretty. I mean, I think the summers were a lot. Most of the summers were really spent gardening. He really, you know, he had his irises, which he did everything with, and a very large vegetable garden. And so I think that was pretty much the summertime. And then, you know, the rest of the year was either the books or working on these boards and doing things with people.
And he would read. He would read.
Well, he reviewed books a lot.
He reviewed books.
Yes, yeah, they'd send him a lot of books.
Did he have a lot of friends, famous or otherwise, coming to the house?
I'd say, yes, I was aware of who they were, but it was such a, we're not necessarily attached to them. They were my dad's friends.
I think he was also very interested in politics and the world and where things were going and wanting things to be better. And I can remember a couple of times he would have, you know, fundraisers and stuff in the house. I mean, I think he felt it was very important to be involved in all that and to, you know, do your bit to try and make sure things were going in the right direction and things were going to be a better place.
Did anybody do canning or?
You haven't said anything about food. What was the cooking?
We had an area that we called down under the trees, which was a large concrete patio with a stone fence, three-fourths of the way around, where there was a barbecue that had been built into the rocks where he cooked with wood. And he would grill chickens there and steaks, etc., in the summer. And the only other dish that I remember him making in the side of the house was a dish called eggs au beurre noir. And that is all I remember. Other than that, my mother cooked.
She was a great cook.
It
doesn't sound like you from what you said about your visitors and but the French creator of the Inspector Maigret series, Georges Simenon, does write about a meeting with Rex Stout, probably in the New York area, because he spent quite some time in that area. And I wonder if you have any recollection of his meeting with Georges Simenon.
No.
If you don't delight me, no one else.
I think it's one of those situations where as a child I wish I remembered more of what I probably heard.
Were you allowed to mix in with the company or were you?
Absolutely.
You were sent to your room?
No. No, we were always included in whatever was going on at High Meadow. One story I do remember is it was during the war because we moved into New York City during the war. My father did not write. Instead, he spent his energies on the war movement. And they were having a party in our New York apartment. And one of the guests was going to be Frederick March. And they told my sister and me this, but we had to go to bed because we had school the next morning. But my parents said they would bring Frederick March in to introduce us. My sister and I laid there just waiting. And something happened. Either we knocked over something or whatever, and we thought, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to get into big trouble. Not that we would have, but in our minds we did. So when my mother and father opened the door with Frederick March, we pretended we were asleep. Pardon?
Where are you?
We lived East 86th Street, off of between 5th Avenue and Park, Madison and Park.
Two questions. How old was your father when he was born? And do you have any contact with the Japanese people?
My father was 50 when I was born.
I once did an article on wines in the collection of stories, and I interviewed the owner of Sherry Lehman's, who said that he used to send wines to your father through Burgess Meredith. That Burgess Meredith picked the wines out for your father, and that he was the wine connoisseur. And actually, he called Burgess Meredith in California, and I spoke to him. Was Burgess Meredith frequently in your house? Did he pick out your father's wines? Or?
I don't know. If you say so, we're going.
Sherry Lehman?
Yes, I know Sherry Lehman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know my dad and Kip Badiman talked about wines a lot.
Did your dad have a time to want to dinner? Was that something he did?
No, it wasn't beer. He liked scotch.
Yes, that's what he
said. He would have a glass of scotch at night, but not when he wrote. And I don't remember him serving wine a lot other than when we had guests.
At which stage in your life did you grow conscious of the product of what went on in that single room upstairs, the books? When did you begin to read them? If you did, have you read all of them? And when did you all start your connection to the actual output?
I'll start. I think I began to understand what went on up in that room when I was maybe 16, 17, and I happened to pick up a book that was around the house, and I started reading it, and I remember walking up to my dad and saying, "Wow, this is what you do?"
I think probably when I was in third or fourth grade, and mainly because he was always kind enough to come to my school and give a talk, which actually...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he came when I was in King Street. He came a couple times, he gave a talk, and was very well received by all the kids. You know, was really good at dealing with the kids and talking to them, so, you know, on their level and stuff like that. So that was probably the beginning. I'm sure I didn't fully appreciate it probably till my teenage years. And I also only read a few of the books, unfortunately. So I know.
There's actually something going on here.
It's more than my grandpa.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, it was just grandpa's office, and to me, it was just going to grandpa's house, and this is just what he did. And it was probably high school for me before I realized what the situation was as it was.
Become a lifelong
fanatic. Not yet, though. There's time.
Yeah. We're a fanatic of him. No, we're always impressed by him.
After you, like they did us. I mean, you know, Wolf and Archie, you know, what are they about? You don't have that same sort of
You know, I think maybe some of it is just that we've...
You're buying your book.
I have the book.
I think that there's something, too, actually having a personal connection with somebody who does this. And I think that there's something there. I can't say that for certain, but talking with other people who have experienced situations like this in their lives, I think there's something to it. Because my brother-in-law is just once removed. And, you know, who knows? There's still time.
Picking up on that question, did he ever say anything about the two movies from the 30s, which were terrible?
He didn't like them, which is probably why he never did anything again after that, because he could be like that. If something like that happened, then he was not going to...
He did view them.
Yes.
Did he ever mention the comic strip or the radio shows? Or?
No. Not that I remember.
He was also not a big fan of TV. I mean, he watched baseball on TV, but I don't really remember him watching a lot on...
No, he read.
He liked to read and had other pursuits.
He did not buy a TV. He won the TV that he got.
At the Fireman's Carnival, that he bought tickets every single year, and one year they came up the next day, and they had this big color TV, and we're all like, "Oh, yes!" And he's like, "All right, whatever."
One more, because I think we're actually running out of time. Two more. Mary?
I think this is only a question, it's more of a comment or kind of voicing frustration. We as a group are very unhappy that Phantom does not promote the series much more rigorously than they do. They kind of give this the minimum of effort. Do you have any sense that they're going to ever be more committed to getting the books out there, getting them all in print and to publicize them again?
I don't know anything about that.
Is Reed in charge of the literary state?
No. Barbara and I are doing it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think today the publishing world, I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but has changed so much and become so much more. I mean, most of these publishing companies are owned by huge corporations and stuff now. And they just, it's very, very different than it was when you first started writing. You know, who they decide to push and where they want to put their money.
We feel that like they're sitting on a very valuable asset and they don't take advantage of it.
We'd love to see them in print. We can do better on membership, and we think that he's an author who should be remembered, and people should be reading his contemporary day. And it's just not that easy.
For
example, John D. MacDonald wrote the Travis McGee series.
Oh, I love that.
All 21 of them. I love them.